All right. Well, I'm going to go ahead and get us started with our mentor mom panel. So if I could have our five mentor moms who are on our panel this morning make their way to the front. Can we just give them a round of applause? Because who really likes to get up and sit in front of people? Well, some people do, I guess. So we are excited about... Oh, I feel like a talk show host. I'm liking this. Well, here we are. All right. Well, I'm excited to introduce our mentor moms today. So normally at Moms Connection, most of our times, if this is your first time, we have one speaker come and share. And about every year we try to have a handful of the mentor moms come up and do a little panel of questions and some practical and spiritual advice. And sometimes, I think for me, this has always been a really encouraging time to see people parent according to their personalities and giftings. And it's just been always, for me, a really refreshing time to see, like, we're all doing it differently. And if we're, you know, trusting the Lord to lead us in our parenting, it's going to look a little bit different for every family. So I know for me, that has always been an encouraging part of this panel, but I'm going to go ahead and let each mentor mom just briefly introduce himself. If you want to just share who you are and maybe anything about your kids or grandkids. And I have questions here. So we have kind of broken down into four categories that I'll share about once we get started. But if we have time at the end, we might have time to take a couple extra questions. So there are index cards on your table. So if you do think of some burning question that you have, I can't guarantee that they'll, you know, they might just be like, sorry, can't answer that on the fly. although I think like it, we said whoever's on the tallest seats has to take the most questions. No. We only had three stools, so there's no seniority here. But if you do have a question, want to put on your index card toward the end, we can collect those and see if we have time for any of those. But we'll go ahead and let y'all introduce yourselves, and then we'll get started.
Can we phone a friend if we get
stuck? Yeah, yeah, yeah. One poll the audience.
Okay. I'm Debbie Smith. We have 10 kids, 9 girls and 1 lone boy. Who has 3 sons, so God was gracious and merciful to him in the end. And we have 17 grandkids, and I can probably tell you more of what not to do than what to do, but I'll give it a shot. So I guess I get
to pick this. I'm Michelle Smith. I have 8 kids, 5 boys, 3 girls. They range from 30 to just 15, so I still have some at home. No grandchildren and only 1 married, and... yeah, I've learned through experience. I actually wasn't raised in a Christian family. I was the first one saved in my family, so it's kind of new and slow at learning. So,
I'm Kay Minter, and I have 4 grown children. I had Kelly when I was 23. She is now 43, and Megan is 41. They're both single. And then I have Katie, who's 38. She is married with 3 kids. David is 35, and he has 3 kids.
I'm Gigi Hill, and I have 2 grown girls. Becky is 42, just is going to be 42 next Friday. And Jennifer is 38. They basically, from the age of like 11, grew up here at RBC because we've been at RBC quite a while. I have 5 grandkids, 2 that are my genetic grandkids, and then 3 kids that were adopted by my oldest daughter and their special needs.
I'm Courtney Cassidy. I do not feel qualified to be sitting on the panel with these pillars of moms here, but I have 4 kids. They are 17 to 10, and I just love being a mom. I always wanted to be a mom, and I'm so thankful that I get to be a mom, and I just love being a mom, so I'm glad to sit here and talk about being a mom.
All right, well, we'll get started. So our first category is a lighter one. It's just relating to family fun. So the first question is, Well, we'll kind of combine the first two. So what kind of fun things did you do with your kids? And were you more of a, like, I play on the floor with my kid, mom, or go find something to do, mom? And then also with that, how did your family do vacations growing up? What did that look like? Did you go on vacations or not? Anyone want to jump in on that?
So, my husband has his own business. We weren't big vacation people. We might, we often went down to visit friends in the mountains for maybe a long weekend, maybe go to the beach. But one thing that we did that I valued a lot, and looking back, it was really neat. Friday nights were our family nights. And although we didn't go places, that was always, well, at least until the older kids got a lot older, then it kind of was not as regular. But whether we just stayed home or invited a family over, it was always a kind of a time where my husband would have some cool activity and then have a Bible principle to go with it. And so those were probably our, looking back, really time I thought was really valuable.
You seem like a fun mom going out.
We didn't have any fun.
Oh, let's see. I do really like to have fun, but I also am very much like a task-oriented person. So I can't really say that I was play on the floor mom, but I loved playing with my kids, loved playing with them when they were little, but I did tell them to go find something to do often. But I am kind of the queen of spinning things. So like making things sound fun when they think it sounds fun, when really it's just getting my things done. Or like, I also have this phrase, like, we're gonna work hard and then we're gonna play hard. So, you know, like they might come home on Friday and I'll say, all right, everybody has these three chores to get done or these three things to get done, and then we're gonna go do this. And really, like, going and doing this might still be getting something checked off my list. But, like, we're going to go to, I don't know, I can't even think of an idea right now. But it's, like, all how you spin things sometimes. And they think it sounds fun. And really, it's getting done what you need to do. So it takes a little bit of, like, thinking and planning ahead of time. So, like, how am I going to spin this? And they have no clue. But, you know, yeah.
I like that. Anyone else? Okay.
We always took vacations. They weren't expensive vacations. We would go visit my parents who lived in Florida, and we would go for like 2 weeks, and they had a pool, and you know how Florida is. And my dad would take us out to dinner, and he had flower shops, so Kelly would go with him to the flower shop and help him, and he would pay her, and she just thought that was really great fun. But Mike and I, we grew up in families that did do family vacations, so it was kind of important to us. But we did not have much money when the kids were little. I mean, you know, I don't want to cry poor, but we were all, it's nothing compared to what people seem to have now. I mean, we rented a house, and, you know, if we went out to dinner, it was maybe Pizza Hut, and that was even a little bit too expensive. So, I mean, everything had to be cheap. But the one thing we did, and it kind of goes into all the categories, is that we did stuff with people, and we had people over. So it's like if we enjoyed a couple and they had kids our kids' age, we'd do something with them. Like, we went to New Hampshire with the Blanchards, who are now missionaries, and they had two little boys, and my kids all played together. David was friends with them. We would do stuff with Diane and Bruce Campbell, and their boys would play with my boys. And, you know, people in the church would give us a week, which was really such a blessing, like a week at their condo because they weren't going to use it or something. So we always did stuff like that. And I think they're very important. Like, I know friends who did not take vacations because they said it was too expensive. And they really regret it. They do regret it because it's a time away where your kids, you know, play with each other. My dad did say one time, he said, Kay, we went all the way to Ocracoke Island in the Outer Banks with people, and my dad said, you're doing everything you do at home without your appliances. I had no washing machine, no dryer, no dishwasher, and I thought, yeah, that's kind of true, isn't it? But, you know, we would all hang out together and play board games together, so I think if you ask my kids, they would say that was really the greatest part. I can't remember what kind of a mom I was. You know, Katie has a great memory, and she has good memories, so I'm, like, so thankful she didn't remember bad stuff. But I wasn't super creative. I did like to play board games. Yeah, that's about it.
I think Deb and Michelle probably do. You had to keep those kids occupied.
Yeah. I have a lot of fun memories that include your... I think some of my kids were born more responsible than I was, and so I would be that mom where, like, it's snowing, let's go skiing, and they're like, Mom, we have class, and I'm like, but I'm your mom, I can write you a note, and you know, and so, but we did things very inexpensively, just hang out at a park with friends, or we had a pool, so we would... Even their birthday parties, we would do like one day in the summer, we'd just do everybody's birthday just because we had a pool. And so I'd get one Costco cake, and the first group of kids would come at like 11. They'd stay for 2 hours, then we'd cut into the cake for the next group of kids who would come for 2 hours. And
that's awesome.
And it just lasted until, like, you know, the last one got a sleepover, and it just worked out. So. You know, and we had a lot of big families, and in our world, the Husses were a big family, and the Smiths. They used to be the boy Smiths, and we were the girl Smiths, but then they had a few girls and messed up that. So we just kept it very simple, and technology wasn't as up, you know, in our faces like it is now. So we were outside and in the creek and dirty and climbing trees and just... doing fun stuff. So.
Awesome. So we have a lot of moms here with littles. And that can be, I feel like, a little more challenging to have fun with your kids. Or what would be your advice for finding joy or having fun when, you know, you have a baby and a toddler? Or what does that look like? Or any advice you would have for moms in that stage?
Who remembers that stage?
I know. Yeah. Or is it like just survive?
I think that's where, I mean, I know friendships later, but I think friendship was huge then. Because even if you have another friend or friends that are in the same stage, going to the playground together or just hanging out at your house or her house, I think makes those long days easier. For me, I think that's what I remember.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
That's good.
Well, we can kind of jump into the. So our next section is on friendships. So I'll go ahead and kick us off. So how did or didn't you make time to have friends when your kids were young, and kind of what did that look like in that stage of making time for friends and spending time with friends? And I know Michelle, you kind of touched on that.
I would encourage you to have older friends and younger friends and friends your age because super valuable. The older moms just like, help, what do I do? And the other moms, you're kind of in, you know, warfare with them together. And then younger friends just, you know, always reaching out to whatever wisdom you can come up with from your younger years, I think is really valuable.
You know, my best friend was, she had five kids, and then we spent a lot of time on the phone trying to keep each other from killing our kids. And but I would recommend definitely, like you said, Michelle, have somebody who's a couple steps ahead of you, and then reach down, like, to those that are a couple steps behind you. That's really, really valuable. And don't worry about your house. I mean, really, don't wait until, oh, well, I got to wait until everything's perfect, and then I'm going to have somebody over. There'll be time for that when your kids have already left home, you know. You can do that. But just if your house is a wreck, you know, like meet at a park or, you know, do something like that. But definitely make time for friends. You need each other.
Yeah. And I, just to piggyback on that, like I had a friend that was a few steps ahead of me when I had small kids, and it was the most precious friendship. And it wasn't anything, I just went to her house and just watched how she was a mom. Like there, it wasn't like we went through Bible studies together, and you know, it wasn't something that was very, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, yeah, I just lived life and watched her live life. I just wanted to like soak up how she lived life and watch how she did it. So it doesn't need to be something very formal. Any of those things, any of those friendships.
This was actually the question that I really wanted to answer because I did it the best of all of these. So I was just so grateful that a friend and I got together and we decided to start a group of ladies praying together. And we gave ourselves the acronym Ladies in Prayer and Service. So it's my lips, ladies. And the thing about that is the two of us that kind of started it were fairly close, but then we invited people that weren't necessarily people that I would have picked as a friend. I think we tend to pick people that are like us, or and sometimes we really miss out when we do that. And so this group of ladies, we started getting together. And our whole purpose was to pray, and to pray for our kids, and then look for areas to serve. Ladies in Prayer and Service, lips. And so the benefit of that is so far-reaching, I can't even tell you, because my kids saw growing up that our friendship was grounded in prayer, grounded in our time seeking the Lord. And then we would, like we got together once a week and we would pray, and there were times when we had to hire a babysitter, there were times when our kids got older and they could babysit, and times when we just let them like tear up the basement. But we would pick one child of among all of our families to pray for each week. We would pick one staff member here at RBC to pray for, and most of our kids went to the same school, and so we would pick one teacher. And we would each write that kid a note or get him a little gift or write a note to the staff person or the teacher. And over the years, my kids felt like that week when they got it was their birthday. It was, and they have hung on to so many of those notes. And those are the ladies in their lives now. When they have a prayer request, they're like, please call your lips, ladies, right away. And those are the ladies that have my back. You know, when I lost my sister unexpectedly a few weeks ago, and those ladies, it wasn't just food. You know, they were there with what I needed. They, like, ran the service. I didn't have to think about it. All I had to think about is what I had to deal with personally. And they were there. We've had six of our kids get married, and those ladies, they did all the food. They did all the decorations. They just, they have served me so amazingly well. And we've been through amazing highs and amazing lows. And I would just encourage you, don't get with a group of ladies that you can pray with, and you will be amazed at the friendships and the relationships, because your heart gets knit with the person that you pray with in a way that just hanging out, not that hanging out at a park is bad or going out to dinner or getting your nails done. Those are all awesome things. But when you are together seeking God, and I would say, and I don't want to talk too long, but the best way you can be a mom is to all out seek the Lord with your whole heart. That is the best way you can be a mom. When your kids see that you go to church because you love church and you don't want to miss it, you go to Bible study because you love Bible study, you pray with ladies because you love seeking the Lord and praying to Him, that's the best way you can be a mom. That's all.
I can say I know a lot of the ladies in the lips group, and they, you know, strongholds have been broken over these many, many years that you all have met, and form a group.
I just wanted to say something about the church ladies also. That's what Kelly calls them. So my daughter, Kelly, is 42, and she speaks and writes books. But she says when she comes home to Reston Bible Church, she said, you know all the church ladies that come and ask you how you're doing and pat you and hug you and slip you $50, you know, because they know you're struggling, or, you know, this was a while back. But it's neat as I look at this group, because, like, Gigi, our daughters were like 10 and 12 or something when they met. So my kids have grown up with these ladies, not Courtney because she's more their age, but Michelle was Kelly's junior high leader. And Michelle would have Kelly over, and then Kelly babysat her kids, and now her kids are babysitting my daughter Katie's kids. And Debbie's children, you know, my children have all been to camp with them, and they've been my kids' counselors, or my kids have been their kids' counselors. And I'm just saying, it's a great thing if you have community for your kids. And when you're building it, you're just doing it for you. You know, I like this person, we're friends. But I realize that it's not just that we're friends. This is my children's heritage. I mean, you know, my children look at Sam and Joan Fiore, who are missionaries in Italy, as like their aunt and uncle, because they have grown up with Sam and Joan. And, you know, we haven't, but they have. And so I did have friends over. I've always really needed friends, wanted friends. And what I did when my kids were little, because I wanted Bible study, I wanted prayer, is I just asked three or four women to come over. And some of them had little kids, some of them didn't. And I had a baby that I wanted to put down for a nap. And I had a toddler that was playing. And so we just had Bible study at my house every week because I didn't want to take Katie. Katie was not good in nurseries. And so that's just what I did. But I think everybody needs trustees, you know, people that get you and will pray for you. And understand you. And one of the questions was, how do you help your kids develop friendships with others and cultivate godly friendships? And I'll just answer that quickly. First of all, you really pray, and you see where they have weak spots. If one's more of a follower, you know, you take that into note. And then if this one's more of a leader, you take that into note. But I put kids together, you know, that I thought, like Diana Campbell and I would go to the park a lot with a picnic so the boys would play, because we wanted them to form a friendship, you know. So, and then when Kelly got to high school, she had some non-Christian friends that she was really into, and I just prayed and prayed and prayed that he would give her Christian friends. And over the course of like a weekend, I said to her one day, well, are you getting together with Melanie and Emily? She goes, no, I'm kind of off them. And I was like, off them? And she found some Christian girls, you know, from Young Life, and that was the beginning of a whole new direction in her life. And I thought, you know, power of prayer. So
that's awesome.
So Art, this is kind of, yeah, twofold. More along the lines of children's friends, like Kay was touching on. So both, what did you do to encourage your children being friends with each other? And I know you kind of mentioned even just going on vacations being one. But also, yeah, how did you help your children cultivate godly friendships? And thanks, Kay.
I agree with everything that these amazing women have said. This is going to sound a little bit on a flip side, but with my kids developing friendships with each other, we didn't do as many play dates as I felt like some of the moms around me were doing with each other. You could be with people every day. And it was really important to me for my kids to have close relationships with each other. So we didn't do play dates all the time. You know, not every day. It's not like we didn't ever see people or have friends, but especially like the one-off play dates as they got older and started being in school. By one-off, I mean like one kid, you know, having a friend over for them, and then the other three, you know, didn't have someone, and it made the whole dynamics in the house change. And which was fine. We did that some, and there was like learning curves to that too, which was good for them to learn. But I really valued the time of with my kids just being together, just them. And it's neat. I mean, I don't know. Like, one of the biggest things that I feel like I want to tell you moms is it just can't be about the results. Like, you know, I'd love to be like, so I did that, and so no, my kids are all best friends. Yes, my kids do all love each other, and I don't know what their relationships are going to be like when they're older. everything that we do as moms can't be for the results. Like, it just has to be because our eyes are on Jesus and we're obeying him as moms. Like, we don't hold the results in our hands. I still feel like I'm in the very beginning stages of seeing that as a mom, so I'm sure I'm going to see that more and more as they get older. But yeah, I just, for my kids developing friendships with each other, I had them be together a lot, just them. And that was really sweet for me as a mom too, to just get to be with them.
A couple times I tried to set my girls up with people that I thought would be great to be their friends, and then I found out that sometimes your kids know the backstory, and they're like, oh no, mom, I mean, on the weekend they're doing drugs. I'm like, oh, you know. So I'm grateful that my kids had more discernment than I did at some point, you know. They're like, oh no, he's like Eddie Haskell, mom, no, you don't want to. And none of you know who Eddie Haskell is, but Leave It to Beaver, I think it was from Leave It to Beaver. Yeah, he looked real good to the parent, but he was the backstabber. So I don't know. It's nice to, if you can find Christian friends and you know that their lives are, you know, the same all week long, then try to connect them. But
all right, anyone else, friends, or we can move on? All right, well, this is one that I'm hoping that you all have, like, some really stellar answers for me on, that it's like your two-year-old can mop the floor, because this is chores is our next section. And so I feel like for a lot of moms, especially, you know, especially if you're transitioning out of a job to stay home, or you're working less hours and all, and trying to figure out the balance of what does chores and housework and all of that look like. So with your husbands, how did you decide, you know, chores around the house when your kids were little and things were changing? And yeah, what did that look like in your house?
Well, I'll start. At first I thought you meant, did my husband do all the chores? Because that was a lesson, too, when I first got married. And I think it was Diana Campbell who said, Michelle, you just have to lower your expectations and just, you know, do whatever you do, you know, for the Lord. But as far as kids go, I struggled at times because I do like things neat and orderly. But I'm kind of an all-or-nothing person. So with little ones, start them early. They love helping you. They love modeling what you do. And try not to go back and redo what they do. we went through so many different chore organization kind of things through the years. And each family's different, each mom's different, each child's different. But we did, like Courtney was saying before, with just having fun, like, try, if you have the right attitude and you kind of make games or, you know, different. We did so many different things through the years, but you put a twist on it where they think, oh, wow, this is fun. And I think that's a goal, because when you get older, they kind of think, oh, this isn't as fun anymore. But so start them early. And there was a book that actually I brought. It's so old, but it was like kind of went along with different things that kids should know at certain ages, and then it also gave different scripture and different things. So that was good for me, because I am a little controlling, but I needed that push, like, oh, at this age they should be making their bed, they should be doing this. I homeschooled, so my kids were home all the time. It's not like I had a neat house, but I think we loved our house and we played and we had fun, but there was a time that you know, before we did this, you have to do X and Y. And before Dad came home, it was like, you know, we need to straighten up the house, make it nice so it's enjoyable for him. And like I said, when they're young, like, they love doing this. But as they get older, there's some different challenges. But I think if you start when you're young and you're consistent, then that helps a little.
I think one thing is to just try to simplify. Like, sometimes I just think we have, like, too much stuff, you know, and if there's too many toys, it's hard to clean up. And I'll be honest, and this is not environmentally, politically correct or whatever, but we use paper plates because it was a lot of kids and a lot of dishes, and it was just a lot. I didn't sort the clothes. I just threw it all in one load, and we all still do that, and it works out okay, you know? It's like, you know, when the hamper got full, you know, I had them do their laundry when they were pretty young, and when your basket gets full, you dump it in, and you switch it, and you do it. And I think just the simpler you can make it, and then just to give you hope, the ones that were the biggest pigs as adults are really tidy, and they can cook really well, and they're great adult human beings. So sometimes it just works out, and you don't have to work so hard at it. So
I know one of the lips ladies, she would, for laundry, because there were five kids, Tuesday they had to have that laundry folded and put away or they didn't get dinner. So, and I say, get them to do their own laundry. We had complaints. You shrunk my, you know, whatever. So at that point, we just had them do their own laundry. But you'd go in there and there'd be like one pair of underpants, you know, and it was all full, you know. So you just have to kind of go with the flow.
I could talk about this stuff for like an hour because this is like my thing. So, but I'm not going to do that. Don't worry. But yes, the laundry. My kids start doing laundry when they're like 8 years old. I mean, the whole thing. That's not totally true. When they're eight, I put the soap in for them.
Because, that's a good plan.
Yeah. But once they put it in the washing machine, and then they tell me it's ready to go. And once I start the washing machine, they do the rest. Literally, they move it to the dryer, they take it to their room, they fold it, they put it away. I could care less what it looks like in their drawer. I don't care. You have to let go of some things. But they wash their own sheets and towels and put sheets back on their beds. But yes, start them early because they do think it's a little bit fun when they're young. Our kids start doing chores when they're like, three. I mean, they can do little things like put the silverware away from the dishwasher, you know, and it just like goes. But we've been actually doing the same. We tried some different things over the years, but we've been doing the same kind of chore thing for like a good, I don't know how long, 8 years. That's pretty good, right? That's a pretty good track record. And once our kids get in middle school, they do get allowance like with doing their chores, and once they get in middle school, their allowance jumps pretty significantly for their world, and then they're responsible for paying for half of all their clothes with their money, so it's kind of like six of one, half dozen of another to us, money-wise, but it teaches them, like, how much clothes cost, and, like, you know, just all those things with clothes and money, and so there's been some good lessons, but I'd rather them learn some of those lessons, like, oh, I blew all my money, and now I need to buy tennis shoes, and I don't have any more money for tennis shoes. I'd rather them figure that out when they're, like, 13 than when they're, like, 30, you know? So, I mean, they'll probably still make mistakes like that later, but it's taught them a lot of good lessons. So we've tried to, like, combine all that together, but I obviously tend to be like very structured and type A, and so I can stay on top of them with that, and it's totally by family and by person, and my husband and I are both kind of type A and like things nice and neat, and so that's what works for our family. So it doesn't mean that that's like right, it's just how our family works, and some of our kids do it better than others, some of them have more money than others, because there's no like arguing. I just, you know, if you did it, you did it, if you didn't, you don't, and you don't get paid for it. Kind of like the real world. Like, you don't do your job, you don't get paid. So, there's not a lot of like nagging and like reminding and like me getting annoyed. Well, sometimes, but I try to keep it.
Well, I did not do well with chores, instituting it in my home, because I grew up in South America and we had maids. So maids cleaned my room, maids made my dinner, and I was never really trained how to do it. This is a disadvantage now because, you know, I am not good at it still. My thinking, and it probably wasn't right, but my thinking with the kids was, they've been in school all day and they need a break. I've been home all day. And now I didn't do obvious things like clean up their room or whatever. But again, I made the mistake, I think, sometimes of hollering when I should have been training, but I didn't really know how to train. So I think it is important to get down on their level and talk to them about what you want and what you expect and what you'd like to see them do. And because that word train up a child in the way he should go. When he's old, he will not depart from it. And I know we think of that spiritually, and Mike and I did do that. But the other training, like my mom, for example, she would be really mad at me, and I'd think, what's up with her? Well, she was mad because I didn't help her clean the kitchen. But she didn't ask me to clean the kitchen. She'd never taught me how to clean the kitchen, and so it didn't even dawn on me. And then my dad would be disappointed with me, you know, okay, you know, and I'd be like, this is just dumb, because I'm in trouble, and I don't even know what I've done, you know. So I wrote down this little tagline, believe it or not, because it just, you must make them mind you, obey. You must make them mind, but be kind. I think so many times mothers, I mean, and I did it, we just holler, and we need to kindly sit down because they don't know, they are children. You know, I needed to sit down with my kids and explain things to them and not just expect, but you know, we're all a product of how we were raised and that kind of thing. But anyway, I was a good cook, I am a good cook. I should have taught my girls how to cook, I did not. I should have taught them how to cook dinner, and it would have been a really good thing. But interesting enough, my older two are excellent cooks and love to have people over for dinner and love to be hospitable. And my one married daughter, it would have really been good for her, but she hates to cook. But you know, I know now that if I'd taught her to cook, it probably wouldn't have helped, you know, because she hates it. So I'm like, Brad, I'm so sorry, you know, but I should have taught her. And then my son, who definitely wasn't taught to cook, he makes homemade bread, you know, and I mean, stuff that like you see out of a restaurant, so. Anyway, I think it's good for kids to have chores, definitely, but I wasn't good at that, and my kids all turned out. So if you're like me, do not despair. Just start in where you are.
Awesome. Well, we're moving into our last section, so we might have time for a couple more questions after this. So if you have written down any questions that we might have time for, if you want to hold them up, and maybe Anna, if you wouldn't mind gathering any that you see, if anyone does have one. All right, so our last session is on cultivating a spiritual environment in your home. And it's something from looking at all of your families. I feel like you've all done well. And so I think the first is just kind of a broader, what did you do to point your kids to Christ? And we'll kind of tie in with that. Did your family do any type of formal devotion time, or more, was it more as you went along? What did that look like in your home?
Oh, boy. I think we tried to do devotional time. We had two saboteurs, especially one. We didn't do very good with that. But one thing we did do, our kids went to public school and Christian school. And when we were wrong or screwed up, we did apologize and ask for forgiveness for our kids. And then even in the Christian school, when the Christian teacher was wrong and didn't admit that they were wrong, we were able to say, you know, okay, this is important to respect your leaders, And yet we would say, yes, they were wrong. And so we would admit that, you know, our kids were actually right in that situation. So they felt like they had a voice at home. And we also, I know Kay has done a talk on sitting around the table. And when they were in school, public school especially, we would sit around and we would talk about, you know, what was the best part of your day, what was the worst part of your day, and their challenges coming up against the culture would come up, and we were able to basically talk about that with them. But the devotional time, boy, I'll tell you, we failed pretty miserably on that one. And I think I taught my kids how to memorize two verses. So, but they're both walking with the Lord. It's grace, a lot of grace.
We were really bad at formal anything. I can think of many times that we tried, you know, and we'd find just the right book, just like we would just find the right homeschool curriculum. And I had more curriculum in my life that never got opened than, you know. But I think one thing that I'm really glad that we did is we just served a lot together. When the kids were involved with Awana, then I would try to help with Awana. Or when they were in junior high or senior high, my husband and I would just try to help and just try to kind of cultivate the idea that our family likes to serve and that's what we do, kind of thing. And so just because of RBC, which I'm so grateful, because I never left the country until my first mission trip, like 15 years ago, but the kids had opportunities in youth group to go places that I would have never even imagined. And so those opportunities just grew them in a huge way. And so did youth group and camps and all of that. Having that is such a blessing. I mean, I'm so grateful that they had that they had the opportunity to memorize verses at Awana, because I was really bad at teaching them that. And obviously not that you expect your youth group or your youth pastors to be the parent. We're the parents, and we need to model and teach that. But I think probably our favorite memories as a family, and if I asked them, I think most of them would say this, are our times together at summer camp or our times together on the mission field, not the vacations. You know, they really loved being able to serve together as a family. So that was huge, and I'm so grateful, you know, to RBC that afforded us those opportunities to go places and be involved with other cultures and other people that are so unlike us, because I mean, we live in Disney World, right? We all know that, but to have a different world view because you see poverty or you see how other people live, that teaches in a way that nothing else can, I think. But did I even answer that?
Yeah, that's great.
Thank you.
I think my husband was really good at this. And he really didn't do anything but open up the Word faithfully pretty much every night after dinner, unless we had something going on. And he really encouraged me he's the night person, I'm the day person. So I homeschooled, but he always was like, I don't care about your curriculum, I don't care about math, whatever. You start in the Word and just working on character. So so for us, it was just, you know, everyone has a Bible, just open it up and just really talk through it. And it was pretty simple. But I encourage you, any that you can all do it. And then, like Debbie said, just serving together as a family was a big thing. And also, when we mess up, I messed up so many ways, so many times, but then just humbling yourself and coming back to your kids and, like, you know, I'm really sorry. And just kind of talking through what you did wrong and what God wants of us. And I know that correcting your kids isn't on here, but I would just encourage, really, if you're in the Word, just saying, why is this wrong? And just that obedience is a big thing for all of us, and we need to be obedient to God. And so, but I would just encourage you, just open up the Bible, and we've seen a lot from that. So.
One thing our shepherd group just decided to do, and we just did this the other night, we're like the two old folks in the shepherd group. All our shepherd group are like our kids' age, and so they all have young kids. And two of the gals went and took the C.S. Lewis Institute for Biblical Training for your children, for discipling your children. So they're all excited about this. So they put it out to us that half of our time in shepherd group we'll be going through some of the curriculum. So what we did the other night, and I would encourage you, even if you have a group of friends, you can do this. We wrote our kids' names down on cards, and then we passed them out. And all five of our grandkids and then all of their kids are being prayed for by people in the shepherd group. And we also gave out addresses, so those kids are going to know that somebody is praying for them. It's a little bit like what you guys did in Lips. And I'm pretty excited to see what happens. I mean, we just did the cards the other night. I think that it has our prayer coverage. It's everything. It really is. The Lord wants to talk to us about our kids.
We, similar to Michelle, my husband is really good about opening the Bible with our kids. So over the years, nearly every night he would sit. We call it the candle. It's a long story. But we would do a devotion time at night. Often he would do it with them and I would leave because he worked really long hours. By the time he got home, I was like, I'm out. Sometimes just to my bed to cry or something. But I do wish that I had memorized scripture more with my kids. We did it in different seasons, and I just see even now with them being a little bit older, it's harder. Like, the older you get, the harder it is. And, I mean, they memorize scripture so easily when they're little, and you can do it so easily. There's so many different, like, things you can get, you know, to get the scripture, like, cards or whatever to go through systems. But they don't see it as a chore when they're 2 and 3 and 4 years old, and you can just be saying it, and they just soak it up, and I just believe that those things never leave them. I mean, God promises that with his word. So I wish I had used all the hours that I had with my kids a little bit more to memorize scripture. But all the hours I had with my kids, I loved them. And I would just encourage you, like, you will not regret any hours that you choose to spend with your kids. I'm trying to remember something someone said to me recently. Oh, it was my sister. And her kids are in daycare, but she's off one day during the week, and she used to put her son in daycare even on the day that she was off. And she was like, I'm just keeping him home now with me, and I just get nothing done. And I told her, you will not regret that. Like, you're not going to regret those hours getting to spend with them. And I mean, spiritually, I just think being present with your kids, sometimes you can be there but not be present, but really being present with your kids, getting to know who each of them is, you can't do that unless you're present and really hearing their heart and how they just talk about how they felt about the sign they just passed when you were driving. I mean, you just learn so much about your kids when you're present and engaged, and then you're able to meet them where they are spiritually. So I would just encourage you. I mean, all the, like, formal things, reading the Bible and memorizing scripture, all of that is really awesome to do with our kids. But for them to be known and for you to meet them where they are and be able to, like, encourage them spiritually, I mean, that's what we want, right? And I think that that's how we will meet our kids too.
Awesome. Well, anything else along the last kind of questions I'll combine is just advice on giving, advice for moms on sharing the gospel with their children, and any books or resources you found helpful. So just especially in those little early years when you're, you know, talking about the cross or talking about Easter, or was there anything especially that you felt like was helpful with your kids?
Wow. My oldest was 8 when she accepted the Lord, but it wasn't because like I did something really awesome. This is a time when God is truly in control. And we had had a big fight, which was, of course, very, you know, common. And she went into her room, and she had, I guess, read in the book of Romans about, I find I do not do the things I should. And I, you know, it. And she was so convicted that I'm just so glad I went back into the room because I wouldn't have known that she was ready, you know, to pray and ask the Lord for forgiveness and the ability to be different. And then her sister was just a little one. She was about 3. And she told the neighbor that you ask Jesus into your heart by talking into your pillow. So, but she was younger when she was ready, so.
Yeah, we started, you know, reading Bible stories to them when they were little, obviously, and they knew everything. And I think Kelly was about 4, and I tried to lead her to Christ, and she said, Mom, stop. I don't understand the whole Bible yet. So I was like, okay. So, you know, it was really good because she's like, back off, I'm not ready. So she did accept the Lord later when she was a few years older. But when she was about 12, she went through a crisis of faith where she wasn't sure she was really saved, and it really bothered her. And I think I sent her to Eric and Bob Scholl and stuff, and they talked to her. But I'm a real firm believer in letting God do that with them on his time, because I've just seen kids who, you know, pray the prayer and, you know, oh, they're saved there. And then later you think, I don't know. I mean, I just wanted it to be real. And Kelly was really struggling when she was about 12 or 13. And I was pretty confident that she was a Christian. But I was not going to tell her that she was, because I wanted the Holy Spirit to do that. And he really did. You know, she struggled and struggled. And then one day she just thought, you know, I do believe this. Because I told her, I said, I see fruit in your life. I see fruit that is coming from you trusting God, you know, in your life. And so anyway, and the other 3, they were probably around 5 or 6. But again, we waited until we really saw them wanting it. Mike and I were first generation Christians. So I was saved at 16. He was 28. So we remember what it was like not to be a Christian. And that's really an invaluable thing, because there was a before and there was an after. Our kids are not only not first generation Christians, they're preacher's kids, which can make it really hard. But 2 things. One thing we've done, we were always authentic with them. We always really told them the truth and where we were coming from, and they knew that it was real in us. And we also never cared what people thought. Mike a little bit more than me, but you know, it's like Kelly would say, well, why can't I go to that movie? You know, so-and-so's going and her dad's an elder. And I said, I don't care. I said, if I say you can't go, it's because I, as your mom, before the Lord, I don't think you should go, you know. So I just want to say, God is going to give them their story, true. They have to live their own lives. It's not going to be your life. But you need to always be speaking truth into their life, not telling them what to do, but speaking truth, because somebody is going to be speaking into their life, and it might as well be you telling them the truth. And my kids know that they can always call me up and ask me for prayer, and that I will always point them to the Lord, and that I will seek God in, you know, their situations. But what's really neat, when they become grown-ups, they can do that for you too, and that's a blessing.
All right, well, I'm going to quickly run through. We have a couple questions, and we might have a few minutes to answer these. I will say, one of the questions is, how do you manage taking care of everyone and everything without being constantly overwhelmed? And I'm going to go ahead and give a plug for our speaker next month, that is basically the topic that she's speaking on. So if anyone wants to chime in on that, but our speaker next month is Christine Wojcik, and her talk is what to do when you feel overwhelmed and discouraged. And so if you can wait, I guess if you can wait a month more of being overwhelmed, and but or if anyone wants to chime in on that. But I'll go ahead and one thing that I thought about, and then I was glad someone asked as well, is what do you do just to create a family culture if your husband is not on the same page, whether he's not walking with the Lord or he's not a believer or he has totally different views on that? Kind of what does that look like in your home as you're raising your kids?
We were both, I think everybody here had believing husbands, so but we were not always on the same page with discipline. And so, and often I would fight with him about, why can't you make her obey? And of course, he couldn't do that. And then, you know, he'd get frustrated with me, why can't you make her obey? So, and I know one time, you know, they got into it, and she was at one side of the door, and he's on the other side of the door. They actually rocked it off the hinges. He was just trying to get in there to settle it, you know. And so we had definitely a strong-willed person in our house. So, yeah, but we always came from a bibliocentric perspective, you know, but we were a little lost sometimes on how that hammers out, because he had a different childhood than I did. You know, we were fighters. He was like, you know, Ozzie and Harriet, Leave It to Beaver. You know, and so we handled things very differently.
My husband is a believer, but he has always worked really long hours, and that was different than I was picturing our family life was going to look like. So I spent the first 2 years being a mom fighting with him about that, like crying, fighting, arguing. And he just, you know, kept being like, this is my job. You know, I'll be home when I get home. And I can remember the moment where I was like, I'm not doing this for our whole life. Like, this isn't what our life is going to look like. Me always not being okay with, you know, just the expectations, having these expectations and always being disappointed with these expectations that are never going to change. I remember the moment where I just was like, Lord, I mean, I don't know if his, you know, what his hours or his attitude about it is right or wrong, but I need to change my attitude. Like, this is not what I want the attitude in our home to be like. And so from that point on, I just chose to obey and be who I needed to be as a mom. And sometimes that meant, you know, he wasn't home from 7 until 9 o'clock at night, and I did everything, you know. He never saw them some days, but I just chose to be who I knew I needed to be before the Lord. And my attitude mattered, and I needed to not be disobedient in before the Lord and have an attitude and then have my kids suffer because of it when, you know. So there was a lot of like really simple dinners and really rushed bedtimes. Because that's all I could do at that point. But we're not responsible for our husbands and their obedience before the Lord. Like, we're just responsible for ourselves and us being the moms that he's asked us to be and the wives that he's asked us to be to our husbands. Yeah.
Awesome. Go ahead. Sorry. I can't really speak to that in a way either, because my husband is a believer, but just it made me think of what Courtney was saying. So much of parenting and motherhood is all about perspective, and I don't know why that is such a hard lesson for me to learn, and I'm still learning it, but I had a privilege of being a stay-at-home mom, and not everybody has that, and just that, you know, if you just shift your thinking to, wow, I am so blessed. you know, we have homes that we live in, and we just have so much, and so much of it we just have to stop for a minute and just shift our perspective and then trust God, you know, because he has put us in this place for such a time as this to do this thing that's before us. And if he's put it before us, then it's our calling from him to do it and to walk through. And he doesn't leave us alone. He gives us the grace. So if you're in a situation with an unbelieving husband, praise God that you're a believer and you have that input with your kids, because that's a gift. And all I can say is you would just have to rely on that perspective change and what God is doing in you and through you for your family, because, you know, we all had believing husbands, so.
Well, as we wrap up, okay.
Just going to say you're never going to nag anyone into the kingdom either. So, I mean, I think our attitude, and I know my attitude wasn't always great when I was raising my kids in my home, but having that attitude of just being that helper can have profound impact on an unbelieving husband. So,
Well, before we close, any final thoughts or encouragements for the moms, or final taglines? You know, we got one.
If I can do it, anybody can do it. You're rocking this.
I just wish I could, like, grab each of your faces and look at you in the eye, but I just want you as moms to know, to have confidence in who God has created you to be, the mom for your children. I just feel like that's the way the enemy gets us so easily, is our confidence in who we are. We compare ourselves so easily, and lies creep into our heads so easily, and I just want you to tell yourself and to know and to have confidence that you are the mom that your children need. Like, you might hear things up here and be like, oh, well, I want to be like that. No, you don't. Like, you really don't want to be like us necessarily. Like, we are who we are because God has created us to be who we needed to be for our kids. But I just want you to have confidence in being the mom for the kids that you have.
And I would say, if I had known that my kids were going to turn out as good as they have, I would have relaxed and enjoyed the ride.
Yeah, and just cling to the Lord. I mean, there will be times when things just seem like you can't do it, or can't handle another night without sleep, or sometimes I would just go lock myself in my room and I don't know what my kids were doing. But it's easy to cry out to your friends and your husband and whatever, but just seek him in those times, and he really, you know, be in the Word and pray, and he does seem to get you through the years.
All right. Well, thank you. And we had a couple questions we didn't get to, but I encourage you, you know, if you want to talk to the mentor mom at your table, or we do have a lot of, on our website, a lot of past talks for Moms Connection that cover a lot of topics, anything from discipline to marriage to all of that, and there's a lot of great stuff there that we've had people speak on before, so I definitely encourage you to check those out. But thank you all. If we can give them a little hand for sharing.